Hi, I'm Dean Koontz. Welcome to my podcast. This one's called Moments in a Publishing Life. Just going to tell you a few little odd stories. I won't take much of your time. But some of you want to be writers. I get letters from you. We get emails from you, and you're asking for advice. It's not that I don't want competition, but I just want you to know it isn't the easiest profession in the world, and a lot of strange things are going to happen to you, and some of them are going to be annoying. I can remember when I sold my first novel, I was so excited about having sold a book because I'd sold a lot of short stories, but I hadn't been able to sell a novel. And I'd written four that nobody wanted. So you begin to wonder if you should actually be learning carpentry or something. But suddenly I had written a science fiction novel. That's what I was writing in those days. And Ace Books, which still exists, many of the companies at that time didn't. In fact, many of the companies that first published me are now out of business. I think I may have mentioned that to you in another podcast. But Ace Books is still around. The Koontz curse didn't put them out of business. And the editor and publisher actually called me up and said, I want to buy this book. So there was a jubilant atmosphere in the Koontz household. But it was for a line called Ace Doubles. Now, you don't see these anymore. And if you're a young person, you wouldn't understand this at all. But if you're a certain age, you may have seen them. Ace published science fiction novels, two in one volume. And they had each side of the book was a book cover. And the one novel was upside down to the other. So when you finished the first novel, you turned the book upside down and over, and there was a new cover, and you started a new novel. And these were shorter novels. And this publisher said to me, your novel's so short, it's at the lower end of our word count for an Ace Double. So we can't pay you the $1,250, which is what they paid in those days for a half of an Ace Double. He said, we're going to have to pay you $1,000. And that's because whoever we put on the other side, the other author who we pay a novel for, is going to have to be paid $1,500. It was a very lucrative business in those days. And he said, so if we pay him $1,500, we can only pay you $1,000. Well, I was so excited about having a novel published that it didn't matter to me at all. I'll take the $1,000 instead of $1,250. The novel was titled Star Quest. I think if I'd called it Star Trek, I would have become an instant billionaire, and I wouldn't have had to take 20 years to get to a bestseller list. But I missed it by a word. Star Quest was published, and on the other side of it was a novel by a writer named Emil Pataia, who wrote largely for the Ace Doubles. He might have had a few other books published in science fiction, but he wrote a lot of Ace Doubles. And a couple of few years went by, and I was selling a little better, and I was leaving the science fiction field, in fact, for mystery suspense and comic novels. And I ran into, at one of the two science fiction conventions I ever attended, I ran into Emil Pataia, and when I saw his name tag, and I said, oh, I'm Dean Koontz. My first novel was published on the other side of yours. You probably don't remember. He said, yes, I do remember that. And he said, and what I most remember is because of you, I had to take only $1,000 because you got $1,500. And I said, oh, so we were both told the same lie. And it was my introduction to how a certain level of the publishing business worked in those days. The publisher didn't mind potentially alienated two of his writers to save $250 each. And he had ended up paying $2,000 for that volume instead of $2,500 and figured it was worth possibly alienating writers to save that much money. Another thing I remember from the early days was in those days, writers were not always shown, and certain levels of the business were not always shown the typeset proofs and allowed to read them. And that was certainly true in paperbacks, and it was also true in certain mystery lines and things like that. And I was selling mysteries to a publisher named Bob's Merrill under the pen name Brian Coffey. I almost forgot that other identity. Brian Coffey wrote this series of heist novels, a character named Tucker who was always robbing someplace. And I sold a novel to Bob's Merrill, and it was called Blood Risk, and they sent it to me. And in those days, as I said, I didn't see anything until we got to the proofs, which are at the times the page proofs are being bound and sent out for reviews, and it's very late in the process. And I had not seen the first pass loose proofs. So when I opened the page proofs, the bound proofs, I discovered that in the many scenes of dialogue in the story where I have two characters talking to each other, I don't use what in the business would be called dialogue tags. I either say he said John said, or Tucker said, or I don't say anything at all. I just give the dialogue and don't identify the speakers, because if the voice of each speaker is unique, you shouldn't need a lot of help to follow who's talking. Every once in a while, you might say, Tucker said, or every once in a while, John said. But most of the time, that dialogue will stand clean on its own. Except the copy editor in this instance didn't believe that was the case. So the copy editor had added dialogue tags to every single dialogue exchange. And I ran into scenes where there were four pages of continuous dialogue where every exchange had its own tag. And it was a scene between a man and a woman. And so it would sort of go like this. It would begin with, well, I would like to, he said. Well, then why don't you, she said. Now, the copy editor also was under the impression if you said, use the word said twice on a page, it would be a very bad idea to use the word said again. So the copy editor had inserted all sorts of really colorful dialogue tags. So as this conversation progressed, people were crying out, exclaiming, wheezing. They didn't even fit the things they were saying in some instances. But another thing that began to happen as we went through the four pages, the copy editor began to realize the dialogue was going somewhere more dramatic. And because the dialogue tags had started too dramatically, the stakes were being raised all the way through these four pages. And I was reading them with a growing sort of anger until I got to the last exchange. My anger immediately exploded into laughter because the final two exchanges were, I'm going to do what I want, he exclaimed. You will not, she ejaculated. I thought, as a bad dialogue tag, that's pretty bad, but having you will not, she ejaculated, seemed a little out of phase on a number of levels. I had to go back to my publisher and say, I know I don't have all kind of authority because who I am in this business, but you're going to have to reset this whole book and take out the dialogue tags. Fortunately, they did. They weren't very happy about it, but fortunately, they did. Another little moment in a publishing life, I wrote a book called The Voice of the Night, which was originally published, supposed to be published under the name David Axton, but the publisher wanted me to create a whole new ending, and I didn't want to do that because I thought the whole new ending sounded very stupid. And while I'm always willing to listen to editorial notes and think about them, I don't want to do something that I think changes the whole point of the novel. So we took the novel away from there and took it over to Doubleday, who wanted to do it under an existing pen name of mine, the aforementioned Brian Coffey. And we did it as Brian Coffey. It was called The Voice of the Night. It's now under my name, has been for a long time. And in the opening chapter, there are these two boys, both 14, and the one boy is not a good boy. He's a little sociopath, basically, but the other child, Colin, is a good kid. He's fallen under the spell of this other boy and is being led towards something horrific, although he doesn't realize it in the beginning of the story. And in the opening sequence, Roy, the bad boy, tells him that he wants trapped a cat in a cage and killed it with a meat fork. That's all he says. He doesn't describe it. Because as faithful readers know, I don't do vivid descriptions of things. I pull back on the blood. I can't watch a bloody movie. I can't write a really gory scene. I can do a line or two that makes you get it all in your head, but I don't want to spend a lot of time depicting it. So the boy just says this. Well, the book came out, and one of the early reviews is one of my favorite reviews of all time, because the woman who reviewed it hated The Voice of the Night. And she said, I hated this book so much in the first chapter, because in the very first chapter, two boys kill a cat. Well, that isn't really true. The cat was killed in the past. The two boys didn't do it. And it doesn't actually happen on stage. It's referred to. And there's no more description than what I've just given you. One of the characters says he did it. But she says, a cat was killed brutally in the first chapter, and I refused to read the rest of this book. Unfortunately, she didn't refuse to review the book. You often think reviewers don't read the books they review because they make so many mistakes sometimes. Not the good reviewers, but some of them do. And I never had, however, before or since, a reviewer announce that he or she had not read the book and then proceed to do a 16-column-inch review of it. And it was not a good review, as you can imagine. It also didn't bear much resemblance to the book. She intuited what must have happened in the rest of the book from this, and I was amazed that any newspaper would publish it. But you float with these things. They happen all the time in a writing career, and I've been very fortunate that 90% of reviewers love what I do, and some don't. And I'll take that. But one day, shortly after the book had come out, and by that time the book came out, it was known that that was my pen name, that it was really a pen name I wrote under. In fact, at the end of this review, this woman revealed that this isn't really a person named Brian Coffey. This is Dean Koontz, who also writes suspense under his own name. So sometime shortly after this book appeared, I was in a bookstore, and I was a benign sort of fellow walking through the bookstore, and I was standing looking at paperbacks, not my own. I don't stand there preening over my own paperbacks. I was further along the shelf than that, and I was paying no attention to other shoppers, but a woman suddenly was standing beside me, and she said, "Are you Dean Koontz?" And I said, "Yes, I am." And she said, "I'll never read that new book you have under a pen name." And I said, I wasn't making a connection. I said, "Why not?" And she said, "You killed a cat in it. I'm a cat lover. How could you kill a cat in it?" And I said, no, you see, I don't really kill a cat in it. It's something a character did offstage," but she wasn't listening. And when she said again, "I'm just so disappointed in you. You killed a cat." And about it, the moment she says, "You killed a cat," a bookstore clerk turned the corner of the aisle and a new me and gave me the strangest look you've ever seen. And I thought, he thinks I really killed a cat, because all he heard her say was, "You killed a cat." And I said, no, you've got it all wrong. Let me explain." And she said, "I'm just never reading anything of yours again." And she walked away, and the bookstore clerk looked at me and said, "Why would you kill a cat?" And I knew he thought it was in real life, and now had a very demented image of what I do for fun. So I ended up spending the next half hour explaining to the staff of the entire store that I not only had not killed a cat in real life, but actually hadn't killed one in the book. If you want to be a writer, these are the wonderful little moments that'll be part of your career. This has been the Dean Koontz Podcast. For more information like this, visit my website at deankoontz.com.